Hello and welcome back to another exciting episode of Film Expert versus Film Noob. I'm Chewy.
And I'm Kat.
And today we are talking about the film Minari. Yeah. Minari, yes. Yay, Minari. Minari is an American film directed by Lee Isaac Chung. He also is the writer of this film. It is a semi-autobiographical film, meaning he just has taken some elements from his life, not direct elements from his life, and has dramatized them to be used in the film. But it's based on his actual experiences growing up, I would assume. And I'll just say this real quick. I want to start with this because this is notable to me that I thought it was interesting. The synopsis is like one sentence. It's a Korean family starts a farm in 1980s Arkansas. And that is really all you need to know to start watching the film. But before we jump in, I just want to get a little bit of a backstory on this director because I thought it was kind of interesting what his history of credits was. His first feature film was in 2007. It was called Munyurangabao. And it is notable because it's the first narrative film to be spoken entirely in Kinya Waranda, which is the native Rwandan dialect. And I think that's interesting because it goes to this film where the entire film is completely spoken in a Korean-English mix, in the sense that they don't speak in Korean and then have scenes where they speak in English. In every scene, they switch between languages constantly. And his history, I guess, with the film Munyurangabao, this director seems to be fascinated with different languages and how they kind of intersect and cultural intersectionality and stuff like that. So Minari, now that we can bring it back to Minari, very critically acclaimed. A lot of people kind of talking around this film because it was widely released, I think, back in February. But it was in Sundance in 2020, and I assumed it got delayed, all that kind of stuff. But it won the jury prize and audience award at Sundance. It got a Golden Globe for Best Foreign Language Film. It got nominations for Best Director and Best Original Screenplay at the Academy Awards. So everyone seems to be talking like a lot about this movie. It has succeeded critically. But finding this movie, oh my God. Oh. Just trying to get this stupid movie. And I'm going to go on a tangent here.
It's not a stupid movie.
The movie's not stupid. my God. Just trying to get the fucking streaming services to play this movie drove me so insane. So Amazon has this problem because when I tried to find this film, I looked up, where's the place to find it? What's the easiest place? And Amazon was one of the first ones that came up. And so I was like, well, I'll start with Amazon. And the same thing happened to me that happened when I watched the film Suspiria. Because it's a mixed language film, the closed captions only caption the English and ignore any other language. So at first we started watching this film and we're like, I don't know what any character is saying. Is that the point of the movie?
The thing is that for me was like, this is too long to be the point of the movie.
We're like 5 minutes in, there's no subtitles and they're speaking like a lot of Korean and only like a little bit of English. And we're like, oh, is this maybe the point?
It wasn't the point.
The point being, it took us an hour to actually start watching this movie because we start on Amazon, we looked around, the subtitles just straight up broken. It drove me insane. And then we go to YouTube. Fine, we'll just rent the movie off of YouTube. Whatever, let's just get it done. And then for some reason, YouTube is having some playback error that they recently updated something. And when you rent movies through YouTube, they just glitch out. And the video signal is just like a wall of messy, blurred pixels. It was horrible. So, my God. I wonder if this is the reason why I don't know very many people who have seen this film. Because it's really hard, coincidentally, just to be able to watch it.
Like, I think
it's being presented incorrectly on Amazon.
Yeah. Like, I was reading on Reddit about it, and a lot of people have the same issue, that they will be watching a film that it's mostly in German, and there's no subtitles. Same thing. They didn't have subtitles for that. And I don't know why you mentioned something while we were watching the movie that maybe Amazon doesn't allow baked subtitles or something.
Oh, yes. I had a theory because in Suspiria, I think I had to get a different version of the film and the subtitles were baked in because it's for an English audience.
Yeah.
So I said, I think the way Amazon does their video coding, that they must just require that there is no baked in subtitles just for international viewing, and then they make subtitle tracks based on exactly whatever their excuse is. It's dumb.
Amazon does such a bad job with streaming. Their platform is all messy. They have stupid features that they're just useless. Like, I hate the feature about them showing in every scene which one is the character in the scene.
Oh, the X-ray. Yeah.
That's the thing, is like, they have all those things that are, for me, I think, so useless. But they don't focus on the things that actually...
The bare essentials?
Yeah, the bare essentials of watching the film or, like, changing to the next, like, episode. Like, for me, sometimes it's even hard to, like, where was that? I need to click for the episodes. Like it's not intuitive. Like, they have a very terrible, like...
Oh, the interface is just god-awful.
Yeah, interface.
It's god-awful. And I don't want to go off on this any longer because they do not deserve any more of our time. So... With that being said, would you recommend this film?
Yes.
Yes. I would also recommend this film. Now, I'm going to say spoilers. Obviously, every week we got to say this just because you never know. But we can't talk about a film without talking about scenes in specificity. So let's just jump right in. First thing I want to say is, aside from our confusion with the subtitle element, all that kind of stuff, this movie more or less is a slice of life film about an immigrant family trying to make it in America, right? That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
So after our excursion with Mitchells and the Machines, because you brought up that you can't really relate to the American family and that style. So I was like, what can we jump to? And I remembered Minari, and I remember I still hadn't seen it. And I was like, this is the perfect example. This is exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah.
We are now both, and even for me as well, because my dad is an Italian and my mother is a Swedish German. So they both have that immigrant experience as well. And this movie is completely about that. The fact that the characters are Korean is almost, I wouldn't say incidental because it's very specific to the culture and the dialogue, but it really could be anything. It's a very similar immigrant experience. And I think that's one of the greatest assets this movie has. They so seamlessly go between speaking in Korean or speaking in English and kind of involving the audience in all these little micro-cultural moments. It's just, the movie is constantly doing that. And it's just, okay, we're on this farm. The parents are fighting about something. What are they fighting about? They, like, take the kids in another room and you see the kids and they're, like, playing and they're like, man, they're fighting again. And they try to show every single aspect of this family as if they're evenly valued. And it just takes you on this really, really interesting journey through all their trials and tribulations of trying to start a farm.
And that's the thing, is like, for me, I related to all of the things they did.
Absolutely.
Because, like, I already immigrated twice. And
well, where from?
Well, from Russia to Ecuador.
Right.
And we were, like, first... Like, I'm not even first generation.
Yeah.
Because I'm an immigrant. So it's like this story, like, it's even closer because it's about your parents not even, like, speaking the language properly and having all these barriers or having to take jobs that are meant for immigrants who don't need to communicate too much and stuff like that. So watching all that and the type of fights they had and all that, like, reminded me about my own experience growing up and how all those things come with immigration. And sometimes you think about why we did it. Why did we immigrate? Because my parents had the same fights. Like,
yes.
Later in the movie, they did mention something like, oh, we moved from Korea to save each other, and now...
Is money supposed to solve all our problems?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah. And I was going to say, to your point, the film is so good at showing how separated they feel, mm-hmm. but at the same time, how positive they're trying to be.
Yeah.
Like, you're making it sound like this film is like a downer or it's all about the struggle and the hardships, and it is. The film is a lot about that. But the film is also a lot about how, even through all these really, really, really tough circumstances, the family still tries to fight for the thing that they think is important. And it's almost always about each other.
Yeah.
And just like, again, to Mitchells and the Machines, that's the more modern version of this, where it's like, we have problems, let's talk about them, let's bring them up. This is obviously a dated example because it takes place in the 80s. So it's all of those flaws.
A more serious example.
It's the more serious example.
Yeah.
It's all of those more dramatic experiences, but in the way that, you know, we can't really communicate about what we want. We all have dreams, we all have hopes, and, you know, I'm trying to do the best thing for you all, but you don't understand what it's like for me as a man being the guy who has to take care of you, or you don't know what it's like to be the mom and I have no friends and I have no life and everything I do is for you. Or the kids were like, we have no friends, nobody looks like us, you know, just they all feel so isolated. Mm-hmm. But the movie doesn't say, I mean, and it's in Arkansas, they're not like, oh man, everyone's racist to them, or no. everyone's really nice to them. Mm-hmm. But they still feel like outsiders. And the movie has scenes where everyone's acting so nice to them, but they feel so uncomfortable, like the characters themselves of the family.
Yeah, and that happens a lot here as well, even in Canada. Like all my immigrants' friends, it doesn't matter how much you learn from the country. It doesn't matter how much you know the language. It doesn't matter how much you try to just be like them. You will never truly blend in. Mm-hmm. Never. You will have to eventually, one way or the other, create your own community and hope for your kids to be the generation who blends in.
Yes.
Like, you're mostly doing it for having a semi-decent, better life than in your original country. But with, like, more like, it's all about the future and hope. Like, immigrating about hope.
They want to take a chance because they know their country is not for them.
Yeah.
So they are hoping and praying that this new one will be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. That is truly the immigrant experience. You're being told, at least in this case, America is the place you go. That is where your opportunity will be. This is where you can start your new life. And with that promise, there's so much excitement. But then when you get there, reality obviously has a way of really subverting your expectations. And that's what this journey is for them. Just every expectation they have gets twisted in a little bit way. Or for instance, when near the beginning of the film, the dad's trying to teach his son a lesson about using your brain. He says, what are the Korean people if not people that think and use their brains? They use their ingenuity. That's what makes us survivors, is that we think about a situation before we act. We think, in this example, when they're looking for water and building a well, he talks to his son. He says, oh, well, where do you think the water will be? Where does water sit, high or low? And he's like, well, low. The kid's like 7 also, by the way. And he just leads him through the whole thing. And it's a learning experience. And the kid is like, oh, well, it must be low and near where the trees are because the trees drink the water. And the dad's very proud of his son. But that comes back later to prove the dad wrong as well, because the dad was doing it from the perspective of being stubborn and not wanting to pay for someone else to find the water for him. But then later when it comes back and everything kind of goes up in smoke or something backfires, he finally does admit that he was wrong. And he's like, also relying on people is not the wrong thing to do.
It's more like he believes that Americans cannot truly help him. So it's a weird thing. It's like you immigrate to this new country thinking that it's better. That's the whole thing. But throughout the movie, he doesn't trust Americans. He didn't trust the guy to help him find water. Then it took him a lot of time to trust the guy who was helping him with the farm.
Yeah, his farmhand.
Yeah. So it's all these things that, like, he has to kind of fight with himself about.
I think it's because it comes from, like I mentioned, the immigrant perspective of feeling isolated.
Yeah.
You have chosen to isolate yourself from your culture by leaving.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, you can't admit that it was a mistake, so you become very stubborn and you push back from all the new things. You go, no, well, I know. It wouldn't work in Korea because, remember, he blames all the city people. He's like, all those city people, they don't know a thing about what good food is, or they have no standard for quality. Like, he just blames all the problems that he had with Korea, but he's kind of like transposing them into America and he's making those same expectations, but it's not true. All mm-hmm. the people in his community genuinely want to help him. He just is too stubborn to admit it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie's all about all of these characters having little moments like that, and they have micro changes. It's not about, if we build the farm, then we're going to be able to buy Timmy the bicycle, and he's always wanted the bicycle, and then he'll be able to go to the race. You know, it's not, there is nothing like that in this movie.
No.
It's just trying to be, what happens next? Oh, the mom's mother, the grandma, is going to come live with them now because the mom is lonely, and the dad agrees, well, yeah, I can't do that to you. Let's bring mom down. And that is a whole new element that gets introduced into the family. But it's not It's not like a turning point or a pinnacle in the movie. It's just an element that happens.
Yeah, all those things are, like, every time they have a fight, one way or the other, they come to an agreement, and you can clearly see they care about each other. And I think all of their fights are rooted in the idea of who cares about the family more.
Yes, you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
So he's stubborn about keeping the farm because he knows he can make big money.
Yes, and he wants to prove himself to his kids and be a good example.
Yeah, well, not even. I think it's maybe the example thing is more just of an excuse to cover his male ego, but in reality, he just wants to provide for his family and not be a failure.
Yes.
Because he knows he can make more money like that instead of his previous job, which was like just checking chickens.
Right. Yeah. She says, well, what's the big deal working minimum wage for the rest of our lives? But he says, but I can't be like that.
Well, yeah. Checking chickens, sex and just like separating them. And that's, like a typical immigrant job. And for her, it's like, why risk it? Why risk it if we can be just stable for our family? Why risk it if we can live near a hospital or a city or near a community? Why risk it? So for him, maybe that is like, no, that's awful. We cannot do that to our family. We have to risk it to grow.
Yes, we should risk it to provide them provide them more, all that stuff. And you're right. Mm-hmm. It's that they're two opposites. They're both trying to do what's best for their family, but she wants to play it safe and he wants to risk it all. Because they obviously just have very different opinions about what they should be able to provide for their family.
What is with men risking it all? I don't understand. That's the thing.
Put it all on 21.
No, but yeah, I was watching the movie and I was like, oh my God, all men are like these. They're all about like investing in something that they don't even know what's going to work, which at the same time is impressive because not most, but sometimes it works. You invest in stock market or you invest in an idea or a business and you're just risking money. You just, I don't know, maybe society teaches men that they will always be able to make money, but they teach women that they should be like more careful with their money because there might be a possibility that you won't get money. Because just recently it has been that women are working and being CEOs and actually making a living wage.
Right.
Before, even when women start working, it was more like just to help out a little bit in their family.
Yeah, it was still kind of like a fragile existence.
Yeah, it was like, oh yeah, I'm a nurse. It gives me money for my stuff and then...
Yeah, but if my husband leaves me, then I have nothing.
Yeah, you can. You will need to get two more jobs or three more shifts to be able to provide for your family. But a man can just work one job and provide for his full family.
But also at the same time, at least in this example, women... We're also just not taught to expect the same level of opportunity. So that's a whole can of worms.
Yeah, that's why it was for me, like watching his attitude towards money reminded me even your attitude towards money.
Right.
Like you just go and spend money. If you think you need a thing that will either bring you joy or more money, you will just go and do it. I physically cannot because I keep thinking like, what if I don't make more money later?
Right.
What if I need to save all this money for an emergency? Like, I don't know why, even though I have a full-time job and a good career, I keep feeling this fear of like, at some point it might be all over. So I need to expect that. But for men, it's so much simpler to just risk it, and it's really really interesting.
Well, to that point, what I would say is, I mean, I feel like you we're comparing apples and oranges because obviously my experience is not, I'm not a man in the 80s who was risking everything on a farm. We're talking it from such a different perspective. But in that perspective, what I will say is men then and still now, and you're saying with the effects of women becoming more in the workplace, that's obviously the positive effect of that leftover. The negative effect of that leftover for men is having to let go of the idea of being ultra independent, because being a man meant to be independent from your family. You mentioned the whole American thing when we talked about Mitchell's being like, I don't get it. Why do they want to be independent? Who, your family, blah, blah, blah. It's because in American families, and by extension, a lot of other families, not just American, could be Canadian, like even Italian, like a lot of those kinds of perspectives, is that your son needs to become the one responsible for everything. So the idea of a man is that you're taking this responsibility whether you like it or not. So you get predisposed to the idea of taking risks because mm-hmm. you're told you have to do things when you don't want to do them because you're the man and you have to.
You have to do the decisions.
You have to do it. Think about an Asian family in the 80s. We just bring back the clock to when he was a kid, that character. That's his role model. Who his dad would be the kind of person who I'm sure would tell him that because mm-hmm. that's what being a man was like in that era. So, you know, Asian families also can have the problem of just being very controlling and being very reserved.
Well, that's what media teaches us.
That is what media teaches us, but there is also some truth to it. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Vancouver and there is so many Koreans there mm-hmm. and being in their households felt exactly like being in this movie.
Yeah.
Because they're still like that. All those little idiosyncrasies about the way they talk, the way they flip-flop between languages. It's like they're this mishmash of all these different things. And it's so great to see it so well portrayed. But again, to the point of, you know, men and their role, this movie just shows and talks about those things from the Asian perspective. But ultimately, it kind of says the same thing we've heard before, that this is toxic and bad. And by the end of the film, when we see all these characters start to evolve and let those things go and become closer as a family, obviously those are the first traits that go away. Because it's just a natural part of growing up out of that era. We all eventually realize that the expectations on men and everything like that were unreasonable or toxic, but some people just can't let them go because it's all they know. Mm-hmm. And then other people obviously let it go wholesale. And they're like, I'm so glad I don't have to be like this anymore. You know, there's a lot of struggles in this film. This is just one of them.
Yeah, but I still think that they're a good family.
Oh, sure,
They're an example of a good family because their fights are... Although, like, I just remember that the grandma in a specific part, they say, like, oh, you'll fight about everything. You always find a reason to fight. But at the same time, I remember all their fights, and they do fight about everything, but because for them, everything is always their family.
Yeah.
They don't have stupid fights. They don't have, like, a fight about where did you put your salt or why did you fold the laundry like this or, like, ridiculous thing like that. They fight about their situation and how they're going to survive and what's the best next move. And they fight about the health of their son that.
Well, because their son has, like, a heart condition. Mm-hmm. So they're always worried about their kids.
Yeah, and I think that's a good family. You don't think about, oh, how it's going to affect me. You mm-hmm. think about how it's going to affect all of us. Their fights are about who is in the right of what's right for the family.
Mm-hmm. And to that point, I have a great segue. And I want to talk about grandma. Because you have kind of just inadvertently set up what I think this movie is really about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that... if grandma represents the old world and culture and she comes into their family and it does kind of disrupt things for a little bit, that is just supposed to represent what being an immigrant is. Because your old world or your grandma, your family, whatever it is, the old world is trying to remind you of all the things you're supposed to be doing. As an immigrant, you've admitted you are trying to let some of those things go. But then when you look at your kids, you say, but what do I give them? How much do I hold back? Do I give it all to them and let them choose? Or do I only give them the parts I think are good? So grandma, when she comes in and quote unquote disrupts the family, it's just that culture catching up with the family. Their kids are getting older. They're asking more questions. They don't like certain Korean things that the parents love, and they're kind of struggling with that. So grandma is supposed to represent just a very basic interpretation of how it feels. Because the parents are feeling the pressure of their grandma being like, why don't you do this? Why aren't you doing this anymore? What happened to these things? She brings all the strange exotic fruits and vegetables from Korea. The kids are like, these are weird. They smell strange. Like, all these little elements just get manifested through the parents fighting about more stuff. Because they're like, oh my God, grandma's doing this. What do we do? Like, we're trying to just give our kids the best.
Yeah, like the kid says, like, grandma smells Korea. And the big
sister smells like Korea.
And then, like, the big sister is like, you haven't even been in Korea.
Yeah, how do you know?
How do you know she smells like Korea? Yeah.
Yeah. But that kind of becomes the middle of the movie, is about the youngest son and the grandmother learning to like each other because they've never met her before. Mm-hmm. She's come straight from Korea, and it's a big deal. So the kids hate her at first.
Not just a small
one. Well, I mean, more. I mean, the sister, she's older, so she's much more like diplomatic. Mm-hmm. But the kid hates her, and they're kind of always like bickering. But the grandma's always challenging what the parents are doing. Like if they're punishing their son, she's like, "Why are you doing that? He's so nice and so sweet." So this kid is like not sure what to make of grandma. And then that journey just becomes him learning to understand what his culture is through grandma.
Because I don't know, he's so little, but he already has a perspective of what a grandma is.
Right.
Like grandmas should be sweet and bake cookies. You just swear and don't bake cookies. You're not a real grandma.
You don't do anything. And he mentions being useless because his dad talks about to be a man is to be useful and find your use. And so even the boy is trying to understand what his parents are giving him versus what his grandma's giving him. Because his grandma is just 100% a Korean lady. So he's like, I've never met anyone like this. My parents are obviously in America. They're different now. So it's really him getting to understand where he comes from and what his place is going to be.
Yeah, because the grandma is being a grandma. Just like, I guess a Korean
just
grandma.
Not what he expected.
Not an American grandma. Yeah, she's like smart and like does things and she doesn't care.
She's wise and she's not what you would think of a typically like gender-rolled woman of being like very like, I'm only in the kitchen. Like she just has so much wisdom and knowledge and encourages the boy. She is the one who helps him believe in himself to feel like he's not weak.
And it doesn't matter how much he speaks bad about her in front of her face.
To her face.
She's so nice to him throughout the movie. He will insult her and she's like, it's okay. She doesn't care.
He's a kid. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Because she is old and admits, it's like, I know.
That I know, it's a kid. It's fine.
I know when they become a teenager what they're going to be like. I know what they're going to be like when they're an adult. Mm-hmm. I know what they're going to be like when they're 40 because I'm looking at my daughter right now and I'm seeing what you guys are dealing with. It's great. So she's just this great little sagacious sprinkling of delicious seasoning all over the amazing lasagna of this film. Get it? Because it's layered.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. All those little elements, the gender roles, the sexism, they kind of have a bit of subtle racism, too, where there's like some of the church kids being like, why is your face flat? I understand. Like, remember there's that little girl who comes up to her to the daughter and is like, can you stop me when you hear a Korean word? And she just goes like, ching chong. Like, she just goes off on like all these like racist mockery soundings of Asian language until she actually finds one. She's like, well, that word means cat in Korean or whatever. And the girl's like, cool, that's so cool. I know Korean. Wow, that's so fascinating. Can you teach me more Korean?
Yeah.
Like, so it kind of has this twist where you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. But then the movie goes, they're just ignorant.
That's the thing. The kids, for example, you can say they're being racist. They're not being racist in the sense of they're making them feel bad. They're actually just, they're just being curious.
They're just genuinely curious.
They're like, what's your face flat? It's not flat. Oh, what's your name? You know, like he dropped it. He's not like, what's your face flat? I hate you. Bye. No, he's like, he asked something stupid. Yes. But then he was just trying to be nice and make a new friend.
Yeah. And then the kid's just like, hey, what's your name? He's like, I'm David. He's like, hey. And James, want to be my friend? And then they're friends. Like, it's hilarious.
Yeah, and the same goes with the girl. Like, she's doing all these noises, and the girl is not even taking it personally. She has no concept. Let's see what she says. And like, that means that. And she's like, that's so cool. She wasn't trying to be mean. She was just being a kid.
It was just an innocent question because they're kids.
And it was an innocent scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it didn't end up badly. It ended up really cute. And then you understand, like, that's how it used to be.
And to be fair, that's kind of like this whole movie. It is very innocent and genuine in the same, and not like, it's almost like Mitchell's and the Machines and this are two sides of the same coin.
No.
Maybe. No, I'm joking, just because I feel like I'm saying a lot of similar things that movie did well. But it's only because what a positive example of a good family is kind of the same across the board.
That's the thing. The thing that they have in common is that at the end of the day, these both movies are about an example of a good family. Mm-hmm. And a good family has a lot of issues. Mm-hmm. A good family has a lot of struggles. A good family will sometimes be like, I'm going to divorce you right now. I hate you. You're doing everything wrong.
Yeah.
And then the next day, they actually talk about it, realize they just
got over it, got heated.
Yeah, it got heated, and they just move on and start working on their problems. It's all about how do we work out the last argument. It's not about how do we stop having arguments.
Yes.
You will never stop having arguments. It's always about just working out the next argument and then hopefully not repeating it.
And that's so interesting because they talk about divorce within like the first 15 minutes of this movie. Like, she's like, I think we should get a divorce. It happens so quick in this movie.
She never says divorce.
She does. She literally brings up, she says divorce.
She says divorce?
She uses the word divorce.
Oh, I thought she never says it.
No, that's what I thought was interesting. That I was like, oh, this movie's setting up that they're going to break up almost immediately. I'm like, oh, is it going to be about everything after that? But no, the movie just sets it up so you understand how high the stakes are between the two of them really early on.
She said divorce. She never said it.
No, I wrote it down specifically because it says first 15 minutes, the parents are already talking about divorce.
Are you sure? Because for me, I actually was trying to pay attention to that. And I was going to say, like, they never truly say divorce. They're always talking about how they're going to, like, be divided. It's always like, oh, I'm going to move to California because it's better for my kid who is sick. And I can just work and make some money and pay off our debt. And then the dad is like, well, I have to finish the farm that I started. So they don't even say like, oh, we're going to get divorced. You can even take it as we're going to separate for a while, you know? But
no,
like if
no.
you said they mentioned that.
Yeah, they do really early on. And actually to that point, early on, they're very much more, it's divorce. But as the movie evolves, then it actually becomes, well, okay, we'll take the kids and do what you want, I guess. And then it becomes more emotional because they're becoming close again. The grandmother has stirred something within the family to help them all start to communicate more again because she just calls people out in the house. So I actually think it's the opposite of what you're saying, where it starts being very direct and then it becomes super indirect because they start to admit that they're making mistakes and they're like, this is my fault. When they're at the end, when they are finally going to break up, she's like, I can't be with you then. I don't see a future where this is going to work out. It's all over. You care more about that farm than you do about this family. And they get back to the farm and grandma, there's a twist in the movie where grandma has a stroke and things start going downhill. And this is kind of towards the end of the film, but grandma sets fire to the barn and burns all of his food and his life is over.
By mistake.
Yes, by mistake. She accidentally, because she's in recovery still, so she's a little frail. And she just lights the barn on fire and he loses everything. And the first thing he does is he runs in and he tries to save his vegetables. But then mom runs in after him and she's helping him save the vegetables. But then in the chaos of the fire, they lose each other. And instead of saving the vegetables, the husband stops and he goes, where's my wife? I got to find her.
And save her.
And saves her and they leave everything behind.
Yeah.
So until they were really faced with the decision, they kept talking like they would abandon each other and leave each other. But then when it came down to it, they just couldn't do it. And then after that, they start over.
They start over.
They stay on the farm.
Yeah, the movie ends very abruptly after that. But it kind of like, it shows that they started over.
They start over again. Yeah. After a moment like that, they go, how can we leave each other behind when all we care about is each other?
So you can imagine, it's up to your imagination, but it seems like they're gonna stay in the farm and start over, like,
yes,
growing vegetables.
The movie
again.
Heavily implies that, like with the well thing, he has hired an actual person to look for water. They're willing to start over in whatever form that means, like truly, and not we're gonna start here and do it the Korean way. It's we're gonna start here and try to just live and figure out what our place is in this part of the world. And it's a much healthier way to live.
Because at the end of the day, I guess after that, he kind of proved to her that she was more important. And that's the only thing she truly needed.
Yeah, it's all she wanted.
Even when they went to the hospital to find out the kid is getting better with his heart.
Yes.
So he doesn't even need surgery anymore. And the doctor even says he might be cured completely in a couple years because he's growing out of it or his heart is like growing
to
be better.
He just said this is what happens. Yeah. Sometimes you have to have surgery. Other times, the kid, as they grow, they just goes away.
Yeah.
And that's what they're getting.
And he kind of implies, like, just keep doing what you're doing, implying that what the decision to go to the farm was a good decision.
It might not have been so bad after all.
Yeah, or like maybe it has, the farm most likely doesn't have anything to do with the kid improving. It's more has to do with like, it's just like a metaphor for the film. Like, yes, whatever they're doing, it's a good decision.
Yeah, bringing grandma in, you know, becoming closer. Obviously, it's just, the metaphor of when the family is closer and more healthy.
Yes.
The children can be healthy.
Yeah. And then even though the kid is better, and then so there's no need to live next to a hospital anymore.
No need to go back to California
and
to their old
jobs.
And
he gets a deal with a store to bring vegetables every week. Mm-hmm. There's no need to even like work on the chicken gender separation factory.
Yeah, the whole thing. Everything is finally working out.
And she still is like, I don't think you chose your family first.
Yeah. It all worked out for you, but how am I supposed to live with you knowing that I'm second to your stupid garden?
Yeah, or we're only going to be okay when things are okay, but not when they're bad. When they're bad, it seems like you don't care, but when they're good, you finally care.
Yeah.
For him is the total opposite. For him is like, I'm working this hard for all of you.
Yes.
Please trust me. I'm trying. Like, I'm not even trying. I have a plan.
Yeah. Yeah, to him, I'm showing my love by bending over backwards and breaking my hands and my feet every single day with this farm. And again, like we talked about the gender role stuff earlier, it all is a part of all that stuff. He feels like he has to be that perfect man because he wants to be the perfect man for his son.
Yeah.
He wants to be the best example. And he just obviously can't communicate it properly.
Yeah, well, he still has good communication. Like, the family's just nice. Even when how they treat their kids, they're not overly aggressive. They're never overly strict.
Well, they try to be. He does hit his son, though.
He never hit him in the movie.
Well, they don't show you in the movie, but they imply it because he makes his son pick out his own stick that he hits him with.
Yeah, so they have a hitting stick.
I mean, when I was a kid, I got hit. I mean, my mom had like a wooden spoon. So like, it was kind of the times. My mom is not really like an abusive person at all. Like, it was like you got to spank your kids sometimes kind of thing. So
yeah, well,
they kind of make it seem like it's maybe that because they get convinced to not do it.
But that's the thing, is like, I think at the end of the day for them specifically, because like, I know like spanking or hitting your children with a thing that it's not going to make too much damage to them was a thing before.
Yes, to try to minimize the actual damage.
It's more like to scare them and tell them there's consequences to their actions.
Yes.
I think that like your example of your mom with a wooden spoon, and I don't know, I also got hit many times, and one time with a belt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the belt. My grandma's favorite.
I don't even know, like, does it even really hurt or is more the sound? I don't remember and I don't want to remember. Maybe I repressed that memory. But that's the thing, is like, that was a thing before for parents. So for them, that's not like abuse. For them, those are like lessons they're teaching.
Well, I know, but I just want to say this really quickly, that they don't look like they're happy about it.
No, they don't.
That's what I mean. What? Like, it's like, it's just, they're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
They have a very specific, it's almost like a ritual. When they show you the scene, it's like the kid has to hold his hands up for like a really long time because they're trying to just make him uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And you pointed out, it's like Chinese water torture. It's like, ha ha ha. But it is like, they're trying to just make him really uncomfortable. And then they get the stick and they want to like hit his side or spank him with whatever. But my point being, the grandma's like, no, let it go. It's fine. Who cares? He's such a sweet boy.
Yeah.
And convinces them not to do it because, to your point, they don't really care. It's just kind of like, I'm supposed to do it, I guess.
Yeah.
And just like my mom, I'm supposed to do it, I guess. But then when they find a reason to let it go, they just do because they don't really care.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, there are abusive parents that will...
Oh, yeah.
They will choose everyday violence, and they will hit their kids just out of like them being frustrated. They will like hit their kid because their like football game went as expected. Well,
yeah,
you know,
so many bad reasons,
like they're
to hit
like
your kid.
Abusive parents that, and there are parents that hit their children because they thought they were supposed to.
Sure,
that,
yeah.
Or like society teaches them that's the only way to teach them lessons.
Right.
So I think this family, although it has that old example of that's how you teach your kids, it's still a loving family.
Mm-hmm.
It's still nice and still like not abusive, not violent, and not like they scream at each other. They never scream at the kids.
Right. Yeah. They never
do that. Yeah. They always like, they're strong with the kids, but not in a bad way. Mm-hmm. They're just.
He has a good dad voice where he just goes like, go outside, get your stick now, do it. Like, he never screams, but it's just a very commanding kind of, like, even the mom's, like, she's just that she has, like, a commanding voice. There's no screaming.
Yeah, and in general, like, even, like, go brush your teeth, go do that. It's just, like, they're just teaching them stuff. They're not doing anything.
Yeah, and they all, and the thing is, what I, very specific to this film as well, because I don't know if this is an Asian thing or not, but, like, the sister's helping take care of the boy, and they're also helping take care of the grandma, or grandma's helping the boy dress. Like, they're all doing each other's tasks, yeah. But not because it's like, well, you're the older sister, you gotta look after your brother. It's like, tomorrow it's grandma doing it.
Yeah.
Tomorrow it's dad. The day after that it's mom. Like, it's just, like, they all take responsibility of taking care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just the way the family dynamic works, and grandma reminds them of that. That's why it brings them back together again.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know, a lot of interesting little things. Although I will say, beyond, I guess, all those family elements and kind of what we've already discussed, that's kind of it. The movie's very simple.
It doesn't mean it's not good. It's
absolutely
really
not
good.
But it is intentionally very simple.
But it's so good. The pacing is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, I never got bored, like, from last week's film, that I got extremely bored and just couldn't watch it. And you could even argue that film was, like, more action film.
it was supposed to be.
I was gonna, like, shoot myself in the head of how bored I was and, like, how much in pain I was watching that movie, because I don't know, something about it just made me suffer.
Mm-hmm. I know. And then this movie has a scene where he haggles with a dude to buy a tractor, and you're like, oh my god, I'm so happy he has the tractor.
Yeah, it's that thing. It's like, although this movie is literally like watching a family, it's like your day to day.
Yes, struggling. Literally the day to day.
Yeah, and like they show you like the scenes that are kind of like have more impact in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so good. Like, the pace, everything, how they jump to other scenes, it's so good.
But then all the scenes kind of take up the same amount of time, so they're not trying to tell you, oh, here's the important scene where grandma helped David with his cut or his boo-boo. It's like, no, that takes as much time as everything else. It's all the same level of importance, because it's just their day-to-day.
Now that you say that, it's true. Like, none of the scenes had more impact.
Yeah, more dramatic weight than another.
No, every single thing that happened is just part of life, and it has its own time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to, people say, give space to your emotions.
Right.
I think it's more they're giving space to these life things to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they all get their own individual moments, and every single character goes through the exact same thing of struggling with their own identity, struggling with what they're told their cultural identity is supposed to be, and then struggling with what the new American mix is supposed to be. They all struggle with that in various ways. And it's just all of them going through that day by day.
Even like the ladies from church, they tell, like, they started a conversation with the mom, and the mom is like, oh no, my English is not good. And they're like, it's okay. We teach English.
We'll teach you English, girl. Yeah. No problem.
And she's kind of like, okay, bye. Like, she's isolated herself.
Yes. And they talk about her. Like, oh, she's so cute. What a doll. Like, oh my God.
Yeah,
I can't
they're
wait
so
to
nice
see her
to
hair.
Her. And she still feels the need to isolate herself.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because maybe you're feeling that you're not, like, you're giving away your culture or something. I don't even know.
Actually, that's a great point, because remember when that farmhand guy, okay, so they have a farmhand who's like kind of a crazy evangelist type, so he's like just super 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 religious and does some weird things. Like, he on Sunday is the guy who drags the cross on the road. Like, he just, the whole thing, like, I gotta do the same walk that Jesus did, and you're just kind of like, okay, and he kind of does some of his more I guess you could say theatrical religious things. Like, he does like muttering and like does hand things. Kind of got like a televangelist vibe to
like
him.
Hallelujah.
So he's kind of a really odd person to them and to everyone, even in Arkansas. Everyone goes, that guy's the weirdo. But when he comes into their house, when they're worried about grandma, he like prays, because the mother is really religious and is like, I want to do all that stuff. And the first thing the dad says is like, what did you tell him about us? Why is he like in our house doing all this stuff? We don't need him in here doing it. He's like, but this guy's your friend, dude. Yeah, you invited him over for dinner and now you're mad at him?
And she's like, why are you not telling him things?
Yeah, like, what are you talking about not telling him anything? What would I tell him? You work with him all day. What are you talking about? And they're just kind of at a standstill. And then the fight just kind of ends, because there's obviously nothing to fight about, but it just shows how they both feels afraid of all these other people.
I think my dad had that issue.
Right?
I think I have the same issue, to be honest. I feel like you leave your country because you hate it.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you're in another culture, what feels safe?
Totally. And because
your culture feels safe.
He does hate it, but she loves it and is like a city person and misses it. So like they're both, she's like, I left it for good reasons, but I miss the city. And he's like, we left it for great reasons because the city sucks. And I hate those people. So they're both representing both of the extremes on that argument where it's like, you can be a little passive because you're afraid of the new culture and you just want to regress and be where it's safe. But at the same time, there is no one can tell us what to do. Our culture is our culture, or not even that. It's not our culture. We have our new culture. That's kind of like the dad. He's like, we're forging our own path. We don't need anybody.
It's just scary. That's the thing. Like, my dad did that.
Mm-hmm.
Although he hated Russia, he isolated himself in Ecuador. Mm-hmm. And now that he's back in Russia, he hates it even more because he hated it in the first place.
And then he's like,
well,
stuck here.
you never built your life in Ecuador. You never made friends.
Mm-hmm.
You never did anything that, like, attaches you to Ecuador to a point that you cannot leave.
Mm-hmm.
Or my mom, she never did that. But for her, it was different because she actually liked Russia and she only left because it was a difficult position for us.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, coming back was great because she has family, she has friends, she has everything
there. She has a community.
My dad doesn't. So it's such a, like, immigrant experience of, like, you have to take the risk to blend with the culture around you.
Totally.
Or else you will feel isolated forever. And I think I have the same issue. Like, although I try as much as possible to be friends with Canadians, I still feel more welcome around immigrants, not only from Latin America or from Russia, but like Philippines or like other Asian countries,
from
people from India. Like, I literally, like, all my closest friend is because they're immigrants, like first or second generation,
right?
Third and fourth, it's already like there's like a problem there. There's always like a not enough understanding of our struggles, so we cannot really bond and create a really strong connection. Sometimes it happened. I have met Canadians that are so empathetic and they understand so much the immigrant struggle that they're just like amazing people. It's like talking to them is just like a relief to your soul to just see that there are people that are willing to open their mind to see what it's truly like. But like, now that I think about them, they usually it's because they lived in another country.
Right.
Because the woman I'm thinking about is because she went to New Zealand and Canada and other countries, and she lived all around the world.
Or to your point, just being aware that other cultures exist.
Yeah.
Because in this movie, they start that off really well, where you're in the house, they arrive at the farm, you're just with the family for like the first 20 minutes, and then when they finally go into the city, you actually feel, even though it's not my culture exactly, it's so similar to my culture, even I, as an audience member, go, oh yeah, this feels weird. All these people are so weird.
Yeah.
But like, I know that that the South is that way, but the movie still makes you feel it.
Yeah.
It's so, so good. Because you forget. You're just in that house for 20 minutes. Then you go out in the world and you're like, oh yeah, these people are weird. They're so strange. And then as the movie progresses and then you get to know them more too, and everyone starts accepting them more, you just go, they weren't weird. We just didn't want to try and understand who they were.
Yeah, like, for example, in the middle of the movie, the weird guy who helps him in the farm, he does say, like, oh, you can use this stick to find water.
And then
he's, like, looking at him like he's a crazy person because he already talked about to another dude that was trying to sell him, like
he was gonna build him a well, but it was like selling him the water stick service. Like, I'll find you water, boy. I find it every time. And he's just like, whatever.
I use this stick to find the water. And the dude is like, yeah, these Americans are dumb. In Korea, we use our brains. And then, like, it comes to that, like, full circle of they actually finally trusting this new culture.
Yes.
Yeah, they're like, okay, let's at least try to do it their way because we have no other way anymore.
Because they're all superstitious in the South, whereas for them, they're like, what a bunch of hokey malarkey.
Mm-hmm.
This is some made up. What, like, the dad is such an obvious atheist. He does not believe in God. Like, he constantly scoffs at the idea when he's not rude necessarily, but he's just kind of like, yeah, okay. He just kind of puts up with it. Mm-hmm. So to him, he's like, God, they're forcing their, like, so many things on him. It's just, they really make you feel like it's a firsthand account of this experience. And I relate to it a lot because it's so many of the things that my dad has talked about or went through, or my mother has talked about or went through. And then even the little boy, I relate to that little boy of having these parents with this weird mishmashed culture and then being like, well, this is your culture though. You have to be like this. And then I'm like, okay, but I don't like those things. And, you know, trying to figure all that stuff out. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like the boy even had more fun with his American friend.
Oh, yeah.
He went to their house and they're like doing crazy things.
Chewing tobacco and like, I don't know. They're playing Korean cards and he's like kicking the kid's ass. It's so great.
And and the other kid is so happy. He doesn't even care.
This game is so cool, man. Like, everything is just, it's a pretty, by and large, a pretty feel-good film.
It's a feel-good film in the sense of like they destroy your heart with some events. And then they kind of like give you this hope of like, oh, things are going to get better.
Yeah, they always get back up and brush themselves off.
Yeah, like even when the, like, first of all, as soon as the film started, I'm like, oh, this kid is going to die. He has a heart problem. We're going to end with this kid in the hospital dying and everyone's crying.
I know, you were immediately like, oh, this is going to be some fucking Hollywood bullshit.
No. To be honest, I'm never wrong. For me, it's the first 3 minutes, maybe maximum 10 minutes, and I already know if I'm going to like the movie.
Well, that's what's supposed to happen. The first 15 minutes are the most important part of any film.
Yeah, so
and in writing theory, they always talk about that.
Really?
That in the first 15 minutes, if you have not set up the tone, the setting, what the inciting incident is going to be, if there is going to be one, if you've not settled those things up by then, you are dragging your feet and you better have a good reason for it.
So there you go. I'm really perceptive about those things. Like, I don't give any chance to the movies.
Yes, you're very strict.
Yeah, I'm
on
very
your
strict. Like, and I didn't even knew about that theory or that filmmakers actually do it.
Oh,
it's just like out of just paying attention throughout my whole life, how a movie starts and I instantly get disappointed and I leave disappointed. And then sometimes a movie starts and I'm like instantly hooked and I leave so happy from the movie theater. So with this movie, like, although I imagine, no, the kid is going to die.
I'm going to cry.
I hate crying. I hate like feeling things. So like it didn't happen. Like in that sense, the kid actually got better. But other things still happen. And that's such a great like life example because sometimes I talk to my sister about life and feeling anxiety and stress and like just not knowing what the future holds, especially now that we like just are still in the middle of the pandemic. I don't even know if it's over. It's like so hard to just say, oh, I'm going to be happy when I have a house. I'm going to be happy when I finally get my car. I'm going to be happy when I finally have my dream job. I'm going to be happy. And it's not about that because as soon as you get the car, someone in your family might die. As soon as you get the house, maybe you lose your job. It doesn't matter if a good thing happened. Life can bring you a bad thing at any point.
Right.
And you have to just be happy in the moment. You cannot rely on your future happiness because that future happiness can crumble in a second.
Mm-hmm. And like, and then you, and also, because you mentioned the ending being quick, it plays to that exact idea you're talking about, that three great things happen to them all at once, and then their food storage burns down and they have to start over. But they became closer as a result. And their family became stronger. So there is still the good thing that happened with the bad thing. But they happened so quickly. It's just, like you said, it's just life is so unpredictable. You can't say, great, I have everything's going my way. It's perfect. Now I'm going to act on my life.
Yeah.
You have to just continue your life as if you are going to lose all those things tomorrow.
And sometimes things that are out of your control are the ones that will help you. Like the dad is always about having the control over the farm and the decisions. Mm-hmm. And he, like the dude, the one that helps him with the farm, he kind of tells him, maybe you should plan things a little bit more separated. And he's like, why? Because they should grow like this. And he's like, Well, not really. Here we just plant them separated. They have more room to grow. You know, they grow taller if you separate them.
We like them really big and tall here in America.
And he's like, oh, okay. And that's true because it ended up helping him because there are scenes that those plants are taller than those two men. And he's like, oh, you kind of like remember that he gave him that kind of like tip.
Yes, but then the movie doesn't also go, hey, remember the tip?
No.
They just go, look at that.
Like, I love that the movie doesn't hold your hand.
Yeah.
It just leaves you to like have your own interpretations. But the grandma does the same thing. She's like, oh, I'm gonna plant Minari in the creek.
Oh, actually, which I looked up, it means water celery.
Water celery. Okay.
I think it's like watercress, essentially.
Okay, yeah. So I'm gonna plant Minari next to the creek. And he's like, yeah, I'll think about it. And she's like, you don't have to think about anything. I'm going to do it anyways. Like, I'm not asking you. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And he's like, whatever, do you. I don't care. It's not my farm.
He's like, all right, whatever. My farm's here. The creek ain't part of my farm.
And
at
the end, when everything burns down,
all they have left is the Minari.
All they have left is the Minari who grew on their own because it was just next to a creek.
Mm-hmm.
And it grew and it's perfect and it looked delicious. And I just maybe have an idea that maybe they will go sell that and have some money.
And
I don't know.
To your point, another subtle metaphor. The dad had no control over the Minari and it grew anyways.
Exactly. So like sometimes letting go control also will bring you something.
Mm-hmm.
That's like really like a lot of like life lessons.
Yeah,
in this
exactly.
Movie.
This movie is a microcosm of all the things that I would hope people would learn when they grow up. Like these are like all these little lessons. Are like these are all just good lessons that everybody should learn.
And the sooner you learn them, the better. Mm-hmm. Because it's really important to just remind yourself about these lessons, because I kind of feel that maybe 4 years ago I knew all these lessons,
mm-hmm.
and because of life and changes and the pandemic, you tend to forget and go back to your old habits about trying to have control over everything or worrying too much about stuff that do not to be you don't have to worry about.
Yeah.
And then you just need a reminder that, hey, like sometimes those things that you think are bad, that you're afraid to let go, those are the things that will bring you something.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you said it. This movie is just not really trying to hold your hand. So, I mean, all of these things are just elements that enrich the movie. And there's still so many more.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like we've talked endlessly about the same thing over and over again. But it's like, this movie is just every moment has so many little lessons and every little interaction from, you know, the kids just having the weird interaction with the ignorant white kids being like, why are you like, there's a little bit of a lesson in there. Our expectations were not met. They were actually just really nice kids or, you know, them trying to find their every single element that we've already discussed is represented in a multitude of different ways on multiple levels by multiple characters.
Really good writing. Really good way of filming, pace, color, acting. Amazing acting.
Oh, that kid is so good. I know you hate kid actors too.
No,
but
I guess I hate American kid actors. I don't know.
Well, that kid's American though.
Well,
this is an American movie.
Yeah, but he is Korean.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Is like, I just hate annoying kids because I grew up in a culture that being annoying is not an option. In Russia, you're not an annoying kid. That doesn't exist, or it didn't exist when I was a kid. You're being annoying, your mom is gonna smack your lips and tell you to shut up and behave yourself in public.
Yeah, but that's not really a great alternative.
No, it's not. But that's the thing. It's like, I grew up thinking that's normal. So when I went to Ecuador, I always was slightly more mature than my peers. But they were always screaming and being gross and doing all these things and trying to like get attention out of screaming and being loud and obnoxious. Well, I grew up in a culture that doing so will just bring you problems and you're not going to have friends if you're like that.
Okay, but as a fun interjection, what I will say, this is the only parenting advice I will give on this podcast.
You're
the
not
problem,
a parent.
Not, the problem in both cases is that the kids are being ignored.
Yeah, I guess so.
It has nothing to do with kids being annoying. It's that kids are being ignored.
Yeah, because
and they're a symptom of being ignored.
Yeah, because for me, it's like, I'm being shut off every single second. So that made me have problems.
Exactly.
And the kids that don't have any structure in their lives and are always screaming around is because they're being ignored because the parents don't even pay attention to them.
They just want someone to pay attention to them.
That's why I like the kid, because he's calm, he's not overactive, he's just like a chill kid, which I find should be the norm. But
he is a very well-behaved child, but he's also a product of his Asian life.
Yeah, I mean,
you've seen how, like we said, how controlling the dad is. Mm-hmm. Just because he is taught to just do whatever he's told.
Yeah.
And this is the point, and maybe that's why the movie takes place when it does, is that it's about the point where that kid starts learning who he wants to be. Because he only does what everyone tells him.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's probably another element that's in there too. Because the kid gets the most screen time out of every character by far. Maybe not by far, but the movie definitely feels like it's centered around him.
Yeah.
So.
Not around the girl. The girl is barely there.
Yeah, his sister's around.
She's around.
She's a character in that she's around, but it is more about his journey because he's really starting to learn.
Because I guess he's like the next generation. Like,
I guess.
He's this youngest next generation.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's like the movie kind of favors that viewpoint a little bit more.
Yeah. But it seems like the girl used to live in Korea because the grandma knew her.
Right.
Yeah. So like the girl is kind of like, she's still a 100% immigrant, but the boy is the first generation.
He was born in
America. That's why it's kind of like the girl is still like okay with all these Korean ways.
Oh, yes.
And she's okay with like just listen to mom and dad, it's fine. But the boy is the one, like, although he's so young, he asks questions about why these and not that.
Yeah. And she is so annoyed by him, like she rolls her eyes at him, like, oh, can you please do this? And he's like, no. And she just goes, man, everything around here keeps getting better and better. Like, she's being, like, the angsty teen.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. But, like, she is, she is more on the culture side.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, it really is kind of about the kid in the end.
I want to say one more thing that was really, really nostalgic for me.
Yeah.
Is that the grandma brought a bunch of like spices and food from
Korea.
Oh,
yeah. That
and
seems great.
When I was in Ecuador, my grandparents will always bring me.
My Nona would do that stuff.
Much food.
Take the radicchio with you over to Uncle Frank. He needs radicchio or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, sure. Whatever.
Not only
packing boxes and taking it like on the plane or whatever.
Like, they will bring teas. Spices, like
everything,
like dried vegetables that are needed for like recipes and stuff. It was crazy. And they will always bring so much, like an entire suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when you go somewhere, you have to bring a suitcase of stuff to them, because when we will go to Russia, we'll bring a bunch of Ecuadorian things to them that they end up liking or something,
right,
or we want them to try. But I sometimes see my friends like going to United States and I'm like, wait, you didn't bring an entire suitcase of stuff with you? What's wrong with you? Like, that's the whole point of traveling, bringing things to your house. What the hell? Yeah, so that was really, really nice. Like, that brought a lot of memories.
It was a warm, nostalgic feeling for me as well. Because I was like, oh, yeah, I've literally been a part of this. I've seen my dad receive these things. Mm-hmm. My dad give. Like, I've seen this on the receiving end and the gifting end as well. So I'm just like, yeah, I know how this feels. This is great. And it's just, like I said, although there's things like that, little elements everywhere that make the world and all the characters feel real.
Yeah, and if you're an immigrant, you'll relate to this. And if you're like Canadian American and you don't have any idea of like the immigrant experience, this is a really nice movie.
You need to watch it.
You
then.
Need to watch
if you
it
don't
too.
If you have no concept of what this feels like, you need to watch the movie, because it is definitely the most clear and easy communication of this. Because obviously, like, there's been tons of movies that talk about the immigrant experience. This one is just very concise. It's not really long.
No.
And it's not trying to make you feel bad.
Yeah.
It's just easy going. Just trying to be like, here are just some facts
because
of this.
Because this family is kind of like, although they were living in California, that maybe if they will have showed us how they live in California, we would have seen a bunch of racist assholes treating them bad.
Maybe.
But because they're in the middle of America and all these people are humble, they treat them with respect and understanding, and they don't really care where they're from because they're a small community.
Yeah.
So that's really nice, because it doesn't make you, as you just said, make you feel bad that you didn't suffer. No, no, no. It's not about suffering. It's about just really looking at this life experience and just learn that, wow, that's a reality for some people. And it's like, at the end of the day, it's
every
really,
level.
On every level. And it's such a cute story. Like, it's so nice. It's cute. It's, it has so much, I don't know, it's not comedy, but like humor. Like, they just do things that make you smile.
And like, they do things that are funny in the sense that it makes you think of your own parents or your own sisters or brothers or whatever. When you see them do certain behavior, like, oh yeah, I got someone in my family who's like that.
Yeah.
You, like, every character has elements. You're like, I've seen that before. Yeah. I know this person in my family is like that. Like, you know, it just tries to really include everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I said, even though it's about a Korean family, it could easily be about
any family.
An African family, yes. An Indian family, an Italian family, an Ecuadorian family, a Russian family. Like, there are so many overlapping similarities with the way it feels. Because that part is always true.
Yes.
How it feels to have to try and adopt a new culture.
Yep.
And, yeah. I mean, I feel like that's a really, really, really great place to end.
Yeah.
This movie is just, it's very cozy. It makes you feel good if you miss your family.
Or sad.
or whatever. Like, this is a great, subtle, fun family experience. You could easily watch this with your family, too. I mean, I think this movie is like PG-13 or something. But you could watch it with your family, and I would recommend it.
There's no violence in this movie.
No violance. I mean, there's a bit of swearing, which they make fun of because grandma swears like a sailor. But yeah, I mean, do you have any final thoughts?
No, it's a great movie.
That's it. No, it's a great movie. Well, thanks again, everybody, so much for listening.
If you're watching on YouTube, please leave some comments down below.
Yeah, sure. Let us know what you think. If you watch Minari because of us, tell us what you think.
Yes, tell us what you want us to watch later.
I mean, maybe. We'll see. I'm not going to let anyone tell me what to watch. But if maybe there's some good suggestions.
If you have good suggestions, we'll watch it.
All right. Let's go eat dinner.